You're listening to the Moms Working Overtime podcast, the community of women you've been searching to find for so long. We bring together our mamas in waiting, brand new moms, stay-at-home moms, working moms, and the moms who maybe just have a little bit more experience than the rest of us. We're all here for community, support, and finding ways to show up better for our families each and every day. I'm so grateful that you're here, and I hope you love what you find on today's episode. Welcome back to the Moms Working Overtime podcast. Super excited to have you ladies here for a new little series that we're going to start, which is going to be the first episode on the first Thursday episode, I should say, of each month, where I'm going to grab a mama. I've got Sierra here, who's going to be showing up more consistently for Q&A episodes, because in motherhood, especially with conversations on social media, there's always so many valid questions, because that's what we do as moms. We question ourselves. And so we're going to do a Thursday episode, the start of each month, where we just talk through some of these questions, and it'll be like a mama chat. You can just sit with us, hang out with us for a little bit, and hear what we have to say. So Sierra, welcome.
I'm so excited. And these are going to be so much fun. I truthfully just love getting to just answer questions, like getting back into the community of what do people actually want to know about. So I'm really excited for this.
Yeah, I think it'll be fun. I think it'll be a chance to really, like I said, just sit down and have a mom chat and talk about all the questions that we all have internally. And there's probably a lot of moms that just don't ask them. But before we dive in, Sierra knows, you all know, some of my favorite products I've been highlighting in the Moms Working Overtime podcast, and a huge opportunity for us to just be able to grow the podcast through this supporting company is Earthly Wellness. And I shared recently that I've been doing the Postpartum Balance, which is a new product for me. And I'm really hoping that this helps with the crazy hormones postpartum. Sierra feels me. She also has a new little one. But what I like about it is I'm choosing products that I know are cleaner, more natural ingredients, less toxic, so that I can feel good about what I'm putting in my body and still accomplish what I need to accomplish. And I know Sierra loves them too. Sierra, what would you say is your top earthly product in your household?
I personally love them for my kids, but if I had to pick one, oh man, I guess I would say the elderberry elixir, just because that's like an everyday immune support. But I truthfully love the Feel Better Fast for my kids. I swear by it.
It's magic.
It is literally magical. So if I had to pick one, I would say the elderberry elixir, but Feel Better Fast is up there.
We have both of those in the cabinet as well. And it's so cute. Sierra, Carter has gotten to the point where he'll run up and stick his tongue out and I'll just put it up, the dropper on his tongue. It's so adorable. But
the immune biotic is also one of my favorites, but it is a little potent for the kids' taste buds. And so now they're like, is this the good one or the good one or the yucky one?
Don't do me dirty, mom.
Yeah. So cute.
No, any mamas who are listening, seriously, if you give Earthly a try, don't ever feel like you have to, because we talk about it. But look, if you're going to give it a try, please use our link in each podcast description. It means the world. It supports the podcast. It allows me to find more incredible guests and just continue to grow what we're doing here. So I appreciate it. Now, let's dive into some questions. That's what we're here for. So, Sierra, you're the guest. I want you to do the honors. Hey, what are we going to chat about first?
I'd say let's chat about some pregnancy-related, breastfeeding-related questions, because you and I are in the thick of it right now, and I feel like that's where the bulk of the questions are coming from, because moms relate to it. So, I say let's start there.
Okay. So we got a question, and actually I got this question from a one-on-one client this week too. So this makes it perfect, about supplements while breastfeeding. Do supplements, don't do supplements, spend your life savings, spend nothing.
I think my first question would be, what's your goal? Are you using supplements to try to increase supply, or are you using supplements for overall just wellness? Like what is the question going to be geared towards there? Because truthfully, I might have two different answers.
That is so true. I love that. See, this is why I bring you on, because my instant response, and maybe this is from the client conversation I just had yesterday, is supplements that improve supply for breastfeeding. But there's a whole other side of that that is also a question that you and I get all the time, is what supplements can I take while breastfeeding? Which I think we can both agree, talk to your OB first and always have them clear everything. My OB cleared majority of my supplements. I don't know about yours. And I was able to continue taking like a lot of my overall foundational health supplements.
And in regards to supplements to take for yourself, I would think, yes, keep it more towards general health. Like, what are you needing? Your multivitamin, your omega-3s, your vitamin D. Like, keep it basic health. Like, you don't need all of the pre-workout supplements and all of those things. One, they're not really generally safe. But truthfully, most of your wellness supplements are going to be mostly safe. Obviously, have that conversation with your healthcare provider. Another one that I often get is protein supplements. I felt comfortable using them during pregnancy. One, because I had such an aversion to protein that I knew I needed to keep my protein intake. So protein supplements played a huge role for me. I also utilized creatine. There's some research on that to support that it can have positive neural benefits for baby. It can also have great benefits for mom and placental health. So truthfully, you talk to your OB, but most of your general wellness supplements are going to be mostly safe, mostly. And
Even magnesium is a big one. I lived for my magnesium, especially during my first pregnancy with Carter. I had pregnancy headaches every day for the entire pregnancy. It was like unfair. I understand pregnancy can be awful, but it was unfair level of headaches. And my magnesium, I would take a scoop of magnesium and take the edge off a little caffeine every single day. And y'all, that is just how I survived.
Yeah, I would agree. That's actually when I started regularly using magnesium, was when I got pregnant with Quinn, my first, because the headaches were so bad. I remember just sobbing because I was like, I can't get it to go away. And you can't take anything because you're pregnant. And Tylenol never worked for me. And ibuprofen was the only thing. And you can't take that while pregnant anyway. So magnesium did wonders and also helped with constipation. And it just helped with restless legs while I
The
was
leg
trying to sleep
cramping.
and pregnancy insomnia. So magnesium, hands down, a game changer.
Yeah, that's a huge one. Now, as far as supplements for breastfeeding supply, the other flip side of this, I've played this game. Okay. So my supply was really, really terrible first go around. Looking back, stress did not work in my favor. Not stimulating production as often didn't work in my favor. So here's the thing. If you aren't going to be stimulating more frequently and stimulating the supply and demand that your body truly operates off of for breast milk supply, and if you cannot, I would say make sure that you're providing the most basic nutrients. I don't know how to say that. Like, you need to be eating a sufficient amount of calories. You need to be drinking enough water. You're taking in some electrolytes. If you're not doing those things, then supplementing on top of that probably isn't going to make a difference. And
It's
that's
like
the game I played.
trying to focus on the landscaping when you haven't even built the house yet. So it's like you gotta get back to the roots of like, okay, are we eating enough? Are we getting enough hydration? What's our stress like? Are we sleeping? LOL, because we love
LOL.
sleep. What is your lifestyle looking like? Because that's gonna have the greatest impact on production. And obviously, to your point, like supply and demand too. Are you nursing frequently? If not, are you pumping on top of that? And there are other things that you can do versus leaning into supplements to help with supply.
Yeah, I mean, when you get into the thick of it and you I that was me. I was making the smoothie with the brewer's yeast and the flax, and I was eating the oats, and there are companies that make a massive profit off of lactation bites, lactation cookies, different things like that. But ultimately, if you're not doing the basics, like I have spent very little money on supplements for breastfeeding this go around because I know that it really just comes down to those things.
Yeah, and I was like tricked, I guess you could say, my first go around. Like I talked about this on my story the other day. It was oversupply. I didn't know it was a thing, and here I was taking all of these lactation bites. My friend was making me these lactation cookies, and I just had like so much milk. I was like, okay, I need to scale it back. What's happening? And I was, so it's just there's so much that goes into it, but I don't think truthfully that you need all of those things. Can they be helpful? Sure. But I think that a lot of people can just benefit from adding those types of foods into their diet anyway because of the health benefits that they can bring. So, do you need them for breast milk production? I think it just depends person to person, and let's look at the lifestyle factors first.
Yes, agree. And use lactation consultants. I also think that lactation consultants are a very underutilized like portion of healthcare. And after we leave the hospital, we don't realize that you can still call the lactation consultant from your hospital. You can reach out to any lactation consultant and get their input as well.
Yes, it is. You will not regret it, I promise. I
Thank
took
you.
all the breastfeeding courses, but it's different when you have this baby in front of you and you're like, okay, this is not textbook. What is happening? And it's just easy to have, or it's better to have another set of eyes because you're tired, you're exhausted, you're frustrated, and having somebody else who can just kind of calm you down for one, encourage you, and then just have a bird's eye view of like fixing the problem.
Yep. What breastfeeding courses did you take, Sierra?
I don't remember the name of it. And this is terrible. I took it with my first, and then you have experience with the
Things are
second.
all a fog now.
I will find it, and then we can put it in the text below.
Yeah.
Because
I took Carrie Lockers and I loved it. I thought it was incredible. I talk about it a lot to my new mamas. I'll also link that one in the podcast description, but 10 out of 10 recommend that because what I took away from that more than anything was how to use a pump and what
yes.
to expect and like how to get a baby to get a good deep latch. I think those are the things that were game changers in me getting that baby handed to me and feeling like, okay, I kind of have this.
Yeah. If you don't follow Carrie Locker, you should. I think she's just a
Yes.
wealth of just relatable knowledge when it comes to breastfeeding postpartum. And I learned so much from her, especially with my first. And even now I'm like, yeah, girl, I relate to that so much. Like, it's just valuable content. So if you're not following her, you should. And then yes, her bringing home baby guide is also really good. I know that's unrelated, but yeah, I will. I literally, my brain is like not firing on all cylinders. I cannot think of the name of the course, but it was very, very, very good.
That's both of us, Sierra. Who put two moms in the trenches of newborn motherhood on a podcast? No, it'll be good. No, this is the next question I was gonna grab that we got is what do you think is the hardest part about motherhood?
Oh man. I it's all hard, right? Like depending on how you look at it and your perspective and like the day-to-day mundane hard, not sleeping is hard, like it's all hard, but I think truthfully the one thing that like every time I think about it just brings tears to my eyes is the hardest part is watching your kids grow up just because like time goes so fast. I'm gonna get like teary-eyed now because I'm postpartum and tired and all the things. But like, I think truthfully, that's the hardest part just because like you have no control over that. Like time is gonna go by and you can't slow it down, you can't change it. And it's beautiful watching your babies grow up, but at the same time, it's like so hard that no one prepares you for. And like I start to think about down the road, I'm like, my kids are gonna get married, they're gonna move out, and I'm gonna miss them. And it's
What if
like,
they move away, Sierra?
yes, I know. And I literally thought about that.
I
I'm like,
cry about that.
my kids live in a different state. I need to make sure I'm retired so I can travel. Like, literally, my brain doesn't stop. So I think that that's the hardest part because I start thinking about all of the what ifs and the things that I can't control. That's the hardest part.
Yeah. That was really similar to what I was thinking because I feel like the hardest part in motherhood is like the reflection that happens at the end of your day, where you look back at your day and you first feel guilt for everything that you feel like you did wrong. You know, maybe you gave them too much screen time, or you raised your voice, or you just said no. You felt like you said no all day long. I know there's a lot of days I look back and I'm like, I could have said yes more. So I think that when you hit that reflection portion as a mom, that initial guilt just wrecks you. But then you have this moment of like, but I already miss them and I love them so much. And then you hit that moment where you're like, it's going so fast. And I feel like that whirlwind of emotions in motherhood where we feel like we're not enough, but like this is so amazing, but this is so hard. And holy cow, how do I freeze time? I think all of that is just, it just makes the mental part of motherhood so hard.
Yeah, and that it can all happen in a matter of seconds too. Just like overwhelming feelings and just thoughts that it's like literally spinning through my head in a matter of 5 seconds, and I'm just like, wow, okay, what? And then at the end of the day is truthfully when like you have a minute to actually like process it all, and then that's when like the overwhelming feelings of like, holy crap. And I think truthfully though, if you can end your day by thinking like, yes, it's hard, but like, hey, this is all going too fast, and it really gives you perspective to just slow down, and you get to try again tomorrow. And I think that that's truthfully the only thing that gets me through that hard is like, hey, we get to try again tomorrow, and you get to try to show up in a better way that you're going to be proud of, and it forces me to be present. And I think that's a good thing and it's a hard thing all at the same time. So.
It is. It is. Let's dive into another similar question, especially related to like the trenches of early motherhood or motherhood with littles, postpartum rage. And I think what goes into this question as well is just the huge fluctuations in emotion that moms can experience. And I don't know, what have been your moments like I know we all have these moments. No one will talk about them, but we will on the podcast. What have been your moments?
I think just like the I recently been telling people this. I don't think I gave enough credit of how hard the transition of 1 to 2 was. I used to think that 0 to 1 was really hard because you have to give up everything and you don't know what to expect. And your free time that you once had is gone. And truthfully, I think that was hard for me, was the 0 to 1, like personally, because I was like, what is this? I can't leave the newborn, but my husband can. And there's certain things that fell on me that, you know, my husband didn't have to worry about or think about. And I think for me, the rage came in that sense, not necessarily like against my husband, but almost like resentment in a way.
Resentment, yeah.
And I had to conversate with that with him. I'm like, hey, we got to talk about this because I don't like these feelings. I don't like having these thoughts, but like, here's where I'm coming up short or where I feel like maybe you're coming up short and it's not intentional. It's just that you don't know. And I would get so frustrated about the things, the lack of freedom that I had compared to the freedom that he had. But then we talked about it. And then he picked up a lot of the things that like I felt like were a burden that he could do, like whether that was dishes, whether that's laundry, whether that's helping cook more, because there's other things that he can't do for the baby that I had to do. Or even the simple thing of like, hey, can you please help me wash the pump parts and the things at the end of the day, because that's exhausting. And so I think for me, the rage or the biggest frustrations were just like the difference in roles. And that 0 to 1, I think was just the hardest, because like I just didn't know all of the things that was going to come with the lack of freedom that I had. And then that 0 to, or the 1 to 2, I think I don't give enough credit because it was just pure chaos all the time, all the time. And I think the biggest rage or frustration moments in that was there was 2 kids now that needed me. And I had a toddler who just turned 2 and a baby who needed to be, everyone wanted to be touching me all of the time. And then, you know, trying to be sentimental with my husband and just keeping things alive there. I was just like, everyone needs me. Everyone needs me. And I just like was touched out a lot. And I would find myself just getting like really frustrated in a moment where it's like Quinn's yelling, mommy, I need a snack. Vaughn was screaming because he needed to be fed. And then my husband's trying to have a conversation with me. And I think it was just like finding myself in those moments where I just wanted to completely lose my shit. And being able to recognize them, getting to that point of being able to recognize those moments was very hard. But again, communicating with my husband, it's like, hey, either at the start of the day or the end of the day, I need time to pour into myself so I can minimize the amount of times that that's going to happen. Because every postpartum experience for me has been so different in regards to the fluctuation of hormones and emotions and being able to roll with it. But communication has been the biggest thing between my husband and I about what do I need to help with managing the feelings and the emotions that come with postpartum and all of the things that you're navigating, because each baby's different. But I know that was a very long-winded answer. I don't even know if that answered your question.
No, it's, I think it's all just relatable because what happens in motherhood is we hide these moments. Like we hide resentment, we hide rage, we hide the overstimulation because especially I think it's so funny when you have a baby, everyone comes over and they're like, "Isn't it so wonderful? It's so amazing. You like feel great, you look great in it." And inside, sometimes you're like, "I am barely holding it together. I got like 3 hours of broken sleep maybe last night." And it's funny when you talk about the resentment from your first. I think I don't know if I felt it more the first time or this time, but last week there was the day where Dylan went out for wings and beer with the guys. And my initial like knee-jerk reaction was, oh my, why does he still get to do these things? Like he gets to go out with the guys for beer. And initially I'm like, oh my gosh. But then I get to thinking about it. And I think this is a personal development piece, which is one of my biggest pieces of feedback for this question. And I was like, Alana, you wouldn't even want to if you could.
I
Like
know.
Alana won't take a bottle still at this point. We're still battling the bottle game. So she's pretty
Even
much
if she
glued to me.
would, you would take her with you. You'd be like, I can't be away from my baby. So it's so funny.
But that's the thing. And like in those moments, I'm like, you know what? I don't I crave it, but I don't crave it anyways. And so why am I resenting him? I want him to go do those things. It's so funny how we like are up and down in motherhood. And I acknowledge that. But my biggest piece of feedback for the rage piece, because I've gone through these extreme just emotions, what even if it's not rage, it's just these extreme emotions in motherhood, is personal development is key and self-care is key. And I feel like that changes the game, because when I do get overstimulated, when I feel like I raise my voice, when I feel like I'm saying no all day long, or I'm overtouched, or any of those things that just lead, it's the straw that breaks the camel's back. Like, you just hit that point where you break. And all of that is cured by me making sure every single day that I do something for me, whether that is working out, even just taking the kids for a walk. It can involve them. It doesn't have to not involve them, but taking the kids for a walk. I like to read. I like to listen to podcasts. And I think when you do those things and you really dig into yourself, you first of all lower the stress, which ultimately leads to those breaking points. But second of all, I feel like you just learn more about yourself. And then in those moments, you can kind of call yourself out, even on the hormones. Like, you can call yourself out and say, okay, I'm going to take a deep breath. I feel this way because of XYZ. This is how I'm going to choose to handle it right now, whether that's you need to step away or you take a certain action step.
And I think that's the biggest point, is like just highlighting that, like, it doesn't make those moments go away. And like by doing personal development or pouring into yourself, like it doesn't mean that you're never going to have those thoughts. But what it allows you to do is recognize that you're having those thoughts and pivot, because pivoting is key. Whether you're about to lose your shit on your kids, whether you are having those resentful thoughts about your husband, it's like, hey, wait a second. That's not actually how you think. And like, there's something that I heard, I don't remember who was talking about it, but you don't have to believe every thought that comes into your head. And I think by doing that personal development, it allows you to kind of make that connection. Like, hey, I don't have to believe that I'm resentful towards my husband. Like, that's not actually how I want to feel. Why am I feeling that way? And you're able to process it. And it's not to say that, like I said, like you're not gonna completely diminish all of those thoughts or all of those moments of rage or all of those feeling triggered by your kids all freaking out at the same time, but it allows you to process it a lot easier and work through it. And in the work, like say you still do lose your shit, you're able to reflect later, and guess what? You can apologize. You can have that conversation with your kids, which is something that I've been challenging myself to do a lot. It's like, hey, just like we talk through their emotions and having them apologize, like you're no different. They're humans too. And so it allows me to go back and like, God, it tears at my heart to like even think about it. But like when I've yelled at them or I've said no too many times, like it allows you to remove yourself from the situation, de-escalate, come back, and then just talk through it. And it allows them to learn from you too, that it's like, hey, mom's not perfect, but she's willing to work through it. And we're all learning at this together. And I think that's just the key, is it's a never-ending journey of learning and trying to figure each other out. And it's beautiful if you allow it to be, but it's very hard at the same time.
Super hard. And just when you think you figure it out, it changes and they move to a different phase or you have a new problem.
100%. And then you're like, well, okay.
Here we go again. Well, Sierra, hey, let's take one more question. You want to pick? Let's pick a last question. I'll give this one to you.
Okay, let's see. We answered that one. Oh, let's talk about baby sleep, because
Oh.
that was
This is
one.
a great time to talk about baby sleep because the last 2 nights I've gotten 2 hours or less.
Sleep, baby sleep. Man, I feel like I could go on forever about that. The question specifically was, do I have a sleep schedule for my 6-week-old? And the answer is no. What is a sleep schedule? And I think this was another topic that actually triggered a lot of rage for me and my first baby, because like you hear all of this. The first question that everyone always asks you after you have a baby is your baby sleeping through the night?
Yes.
And as in, like, why do people ask that? Because no, the babies don't sleep. Do they ever sleep? Because my 4-year-old still doesn't sleep. Like, hello,
I was
don't
literally about to
ask.
say, Sierra, I have no place answering these questions because my kids don't sleep.
My kids don't sleep. So again, I don't have any advice for this, but like I think my
You're
biggest piece
officially
of
listening
advice,
to the worst podcast ever for sleep.
do not ask us about sleep.
Do the opposite of everything we say.
But I think that for a lot of moms, this is such a triggering question, because people are always asking, is your baby sleeping through the night? And they see everything on the social media about sleep training your baby, getting your baby to sleep longer stretches. And when your baby doesn't sleep, guess what? It makes you feel like a failure, and you feel more frustrated because your baby's not sleeping. And that was me with my first. We did all the sleep training. things. I'm not joking. I think I paid for so many different courses and so many different things, and nothing worked. We even did the cry it out method. There was one night she cried for almost 4 hours. 4 hours. And I was like, I'm done. I'm not doing this anymore. Like, it is what it is. And in that moment, I shifted my perspective of, okay, this is how it's going to be. And it's going to be hard, but guess what? It's all a phase. And it got, not that her sleep got better, but my rage towards the situation got better because I was no longer expecting her to sleep through the night. And so when she would wake up 17 times in 30 minutes, I was like, hey, you know what? It is what it is. And eventually she started sleeping better. I literally remember rocking her in a rocking chair while I was in labor with my second baby at 2 a.m. that I was like, we're really doing this. How the hell am I going to do this with two babies? I don't know, but we're going to figure it out. So I think my biggest piece of advice for sleep schedules is find what you're okay with. For a lot of people, sleep training works, and it's a game changer, and it saves their stress, saves their marriage. But for me and for us, sleep training didn't work. But truthfully, at 6 weeks old, I don't know that you should be sleep training. Your babies are still figuring it out. I would say diving into a routine, because I know your babies don't really sleep, my babies don't really sleep, but we still have a routine. And starting there versus trying to focus on getting your baby on a set schedule, focus on like that. Every time we're going to take a nap or every time we're going to go to sleep, it's similar. But then by the time you have the third kid, it's like, hey, I need my baby to be able to sleep on the go because we're constantly on the go. So it's so funny. Like first baby, it was like dark, dark room, sound
Sound
machine.
machine.
We're on a set schedule. Nap schedules are at this time, this time, this time. Second kid, he's sleeping out on the patio while my husband's mowing the grass. And like, it's fine. I don't know. Again, I'm not the one to ask about sleep advice because my kids don't sleep.
I would just say, no, I think there's good points here, though. The first thing I would say is remove expectations. Like you talked about, there's so much pressure. And especially if you have people constantly asking you, they always follow up that question with like how their baby slept or how their kids are sleeping currently. And it's like everyone is in a different situation. Everyone has kids that are different ages. Neither of my kids are over 20 months old. So I feel like I shouldn't expect much better at this point. This is a problem I have. I want to talk about this, is I think that we push a ton of independence and adult habits on children these days, especially babies and toddlers. And we expect them to have a bedtime and understand it's bedtime and have this beautiful 8 to 10, maybe 12-hour stretch of sleep and then get up and function and operate on a schedule just like we do. And I don't think kids were naturally developed to be that way. And so that's what I try and remind myself when it comes to my kids' sleep and just rolling with the punches is they're kids. It's not going to be perfect. They're going to get out of bed. They're going to cry for me. I love that they cry for me. There's a beautiful piece of why they cry for us if you can find it. And I know that's so hard when it's 3 a.m. and you've been up every hour since 11. I get that. But I truly believe like we have such high expectations for our babies. And especially with this question, you know, coming for a 6-week-old, like, oh my gosh, mama, give yourself so much grace. It's just really hard in the beginning. It's not going to be perfect. But like Sierra said, one of the things that we do with our kids, regardless, is we have a set bath time. We personally do a bath every night. I think it sets the tone for bedtime. It's relaxing. They enjoy it. So it pushes through that like hard hour. We do jammies. We do bottles, we do quiet time, and then it's time for bed. And like Sierra, we've tried a number of different things. I think what it comes down to, if you're listening, is remember you have instincts for a reason. And there's 1,000 people that offer sleep training courses. There's 1,000 different books out there. There's all these social media accounts. And look, they're great. I actually have an amazing interview coming up on the podcast with two ladies that do sleep training. And it's so interesting. And I love hearing the different strategies. But just don't forget at the end of the day that you have instincts for a reason. And I think that's just a major point with sleep, because if you keep comparing yourself to this perfect sleep schedule that you're trying to achieve that's not working for your kid, you're going to run yourself into the ground and it's going to make you feel awful.
And I think this question is also rooted in, I'm going to just speculate a little bit here, but the fact that moms are trying to start to transition to go back to work. And it's like, okay, I got to get this baby on a routine because I got to get back to work. And how am I going to do all of these things while not sleeping? And I totally get it. And that's a whole nother topic for a whole nother day. But truthfully, finding what works for your family, shifting your expectations to align with what are your goals. And then if you guys decide to sleep train, that's great. Find resources that can help you. But truthfully, stop comparing ourselves and For the love of sweet Jesus, stop asking new moms if their baby is sleeping through the night. Because they're not. They're not.
Nobody's sleeping. No one's sleeping. And no one's sleeping in Sierra and I's households either. So if anyone needs to talk, you just message us. Actually, I saw that you responded to my text message at like 1:30 or 2 in the morning this morning. And I was like, we are so on the same wavelength right now.
I don't know. I don't know. I haven't slept in 4 years, so I don't even know what time it is anymore.
Oh my gosh. Well, mamas who are listening, hey, come back the first Thursday episode of every single month and we're going to hang out. And if you have questions that you want Sierra and I to talk about, send them to us at any point in time. We do throw question boxes on our social media occasionally to try and keep up with any questions that you have. And we'll keep a running list of these questions for the episodes. But if you have a specific question, something that you really want to hear us talk about, DM Sierra or DM me and just let me know that you want to see it on the Q&A episodes. And before we let you go today, I always want you to know, especially after doing an episode like this, look, we all question ourselves. We all have doubts. We all have guilt in motherhood. But the reminder that you need every single day, not only from the people in your day-to-day life, but always when you come to the Moms Working Overtime podcast, is Mama, you're doing a really amazing job. And we'll talk soon. If you loved this episode of Moms Working Overtime, do me a favor. Share it on social media or send it to another mom to remind her that you love her and that she's doing such an amazing job. There's nothing more incredible that we can do in this community than remind other mamas of their strength. I'm so glad you were here today, and just know that I appreciate you an overtime amount.